know we're few, but we need to get started so we can stay on time. My name is Melody Kina, and I work for the Forest Service in Hamden, Connecticut. And our symposium this morning is Influence of Molecular Technology on Invasive Species Programs. And the ways that this is done, the ways that molecular technology are involved in invasive species programs include identifying species and biotypes, rapid identification of all stages of the organism, determining the origin of introduction or interception, understanding population dynamics, and determining relatedness to other species, and also developing novel control methods. And we have speakers basically covering the gamut this morning. And it fits with the meeting theme in that invasive species that affect agriculture, forestry, urban areas, and human beings are all going to be part of this symposium. And it's talking about basic science, providing biological basis for invasive species management decisions. And it's the combined efforts of graduate students, postdocs, government and university scientists. So we have a broad range of speakers. And we also have one remote presentation that's going to be given from a person actually located in New Zealand this morning. And so we also have the national and international collaborations piece to it. All right, the first talk is mine, and my co-author is Marie-Jose Cote of the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, and our talk is Can Molecular Markers Predict Female Flight Capability of Intercepted Gypsy Moths? If you don't know where gypsy moths are found across Eurasia, they're basically found between about 60 degrees north and 30 degrees north over most of the range, but a little bit further south down to 20 degrees north in the Far East. And in the late 1800s, gypsy moth was introduced from Europe into the United States and has continued to spread, and this is the current counties both in the United States and in Canada where it's under quarantine at this point. And the version that we have is the non-flighted female version. Female gypsy moths, got pictures here for you. There are three recognized subspecies. This just came out. Pug and Schaefer just published a revision. And the three subspecies are Dispar, which is listed in their publication as being found in Europe and the United States. Dispar Asiatica, which is basically the Urals and East into Far East. And then Japonica, which is found in just parts of Japan. And these are the ways that they say that you can tell them apart. The wing color, the wing length, and a postmedial line. Not real easy to do, and the postmedial line is this line here. And as you can see, that doesn't hold true. I found complete most postmedial lines and partial ones both in the Dispar and the Asiatica forms that I worked with. So why do we care? The flight-capable females are capable of flying, and they are attracted to lights. And this is a building in Russia that's just absolutely plastered with gypsy moth egg masses. This is the non-flighted form on the bottom and the flighted form on the top. It's basically the size of the wings relative to the body. And there's also more color variation in the larvae and several other traits for the individual populations where flight is found. There are some other traits that are undesirable that are also associated with female flight capability. Larvae can utilize hosts that are only marginal for the flightless biotype. Eggs from some strains require less chill before they're able to hatch, so they might be able to utilize parts of the country where the winters are shorter. Some strains are more tolerant of some of the biorational pesticides, and both sexes are attracted to lights. So what has happened is that the flighted form has been introduced into the United States multiple times. The two ways that it comes in is because it's attracted to lights. Some of the ports in the Far East are close to forests. The females fly into those ports because they're lit at night and lay their eggs on either the cargo or the vessels that will be moving around the world. The other possibility, and we saw that coming out of Germany, was that in outbreak populations, the large larvae tend to crawl looking for pupation sites, and they will pupate on cargo, military equipment, whatever. And then when you open the hold, when they get over here, they've had time to close and the females can fly out. So to do this work, there were 46 strains from a broad geographical range that came into the quarantine facility in Connecticut, and we then reared them. The larvae were all reared the same way and under the same conditions to eliminate maternal effects. And for the flight studies, we used two females from each of 15 egg masses, or if we had less egg masses, we used equal numbers from each egg mass, generally about 30 individuals minimum. For the female body and wing measurements, we used a separate set of 20 females from each strain, because when we measured them, we would damage them for flight. And then for the DNA, because what would be intercepted would be males in pheromone traps, we used the males from the same generation as the females that we flight tested. But we were only able to use 31 of the strains, just because of the sheer numbers of DNA tests. So there were two flight tests that were done. This one up here is a flip test. It basically measures wing muscle strength. We turn the female on her back and see if she could right herself. And the other was a free flight test, setting a room at dusk conditions, which is what they would fly under normally, and evaluating their flight capability. If they could ascend and fly around the room, it was full flight. The intermediate types would be glides. They're flapping their wings vigorously but not able to gain any altitude. And if they just dropped or didn't attempt to fly, it was a no flight. Here's what we found for the forewing lynx. This isn't taking body size into account. This is just by country of origin. The black bars are countries where there was no female flight. The yellow, there was some female flight, but not a lot. And the green, where there was a lot of female flight. And then the blue bar is a hybrid between a non-flighted and a flighted strain. And here's the Dispar subspecies wing length for comparison. You can see that the populations that had any flight, the wing lengths exceeded that, were more like the Asiatica form. And we actually had one non-flighted form that the wing lengths were longer, and that was because those were extra large females. If you take body size into account, and the way we did that was we took forewing length, hind wing length, and abdominal width. And then we did a discriminant analysis against the North American, the F1 hybrid, and the Russian. And you can see that no population was completely, purely one wing type. Even the ones with full flight over here had some that were more like the hybrid wing type. And then before I discuss the flight piece, I want to give you a little bit of background. If we cross a non-flighted form with a form that has predominantly flight, the first generation hybrids and second generation hybrids, a large proportion of them only have the glide capability. And this is a polygenic inheritance. About 60% of the variation is due to genetic variation. And the muscle strength, on the other hand, a lot of environmental effect there. It's only 10% due to genetic variance. And what you see there is that hybrids tend to have more ability to flip, so that there's more musculature strength, and they may not have the wing length to go with it. Okay, all of these slides, the flight is going to be on the left and the flip capability on the right. In North America, basically, they don't fly. There's a few that are able to glide a short distance, and they're also not able to flip, so they don't have the musculature. Across Europe, the story's a little bit different. For populations south of all of these major mountain ranges, there's predominantly no flight, minimal glides, and not very much ability to right themselves. But north of that, which would be contiguous with Russia and Siberia, there is flight capability in variable amounts. And as you move further east, flight capability increases, and flip capability is almost complete. Basically, if you have full-flighted females in the populations, more than 90% of them are able to right themselves. And the population with the highest flight capability was this one here in Siberia, which is consistent with the literature that out of Russia, that large flocks of them were able to fly over the Ural Mountains even from this area. Well, given all of that, they're not visually distinguishable, so we need to look to the DNA. And these are the three DNA techniques that are used operationally to try to identify the origin of the intercepted moths and to at least attempt to get at whether the population is one that female flight is present in or not. So it's mitochondrial haplotypes, an FS1 rapid PCR DNA marker, and four microsatellite DNA loci. The four mitochondrial DNA haplotypes are from the cytochrome oxidase 1 section, and there were two primers used, and then there were restriction enzymes that digested the PCR product, BAMH1 and NLA3. The digested product then is size fractioned using electrophoresis and agarose gel, and these are the results, and I'm just going to refer to them by these dark B pluses, B minuses, N pluses, N minuses. Then the FS1 rapid PCR DNA marker. This is a polymorphic region of the nuclear genome. The fragments are amplified using PCR with a locus-specific primer, the JS1 or JS2. And the digested PCR product is again size fractioned. And these are the results that you get. You get possibility of two bands if you only get the 200 base pair band, it's a homozygous NN. If it's a 300 base only, it's the AA homozygous. And if you get both bands, you've got a heterozygote. Okay, so on your left will be the FS1 marker results. On the right will be the mitochondrial DNA haplotypes. And for ease of discussion, I'm going to consider this B minus B or N minus as North American haplotype. The yellow one I'll call the Siberian, and the pink one I will call the Far East. So across the U.S. populations we evaluated, for the FS1, there was a little bit of hybrids showing up, but basically the NN type, and it was all the North American haplotype. That isn't true for everything that has been done in North America. There's a little bit of variation, and this is part of what causes us some trouble. There's a little bit of the Siberian haplotype showing up, as well as even some of the homozygous AAFS1 genotype showing up. As you move across Europe, you see that the mountains don't make a difference now in the genetics. Basically, in Europe, you've got the Siberian haplotype, and as you move further to the east, the percentage of the A allele in the FS1 increases. You move into the further east portion, again, the FS1, the A allele is increasing to the point that it becomes fixed in the Far East, for the most part. And this set of mountain ranges here tends to determine which haplotype in the mitochondrial DNA is present. So you have the Far Eastern haplotype to the east of those, and you have the Siberian to the west. This Hokkaido one, it came up as Siberian in this test because that's how it types, but if you look at more of the DNA, it's very different than the Siberian at other sites. Okay, the final one, the four microsatellite loci one. The fragments were amplified with PCR using primers, and these are the four primers. The product is size fractioned with electrophoresis, but now it's the urea polyacrylamide gel. And these are the alleles that were found. So there's a lot more variation picked up here, which makes it a more complicated story. Here are the four primers, and I'm showing you that all the alleles for each one and the allele frequencies for Europe, Asia, Siberia, and North America. The A's stand for Asia. These you just can't see them because it's not enough of it there to show up on the graph. These arrows indicate that those alleles were actually found in other samples, but not in this particular sample. So you can see that the Asian Siberian group have a lot more alleles showing up, a lot more variation. Then you go into the European group, and they have some of the same alleles as the Asian ones showing up, but not all of the Asian ones. And then you go into the North American ones, and then you get down to two or three alleles is all that's showing up. But they tend to be the ones that are in highest frequency in Europe. So there's not much in the way of alleles that are specific to a specific area. It's more the percentage of the alleles in the population. So what I did to answer the initial question of the talk is I took the knee genetic distances based on all of the markers and did a principal coordinate analysis. And so to orient you, all the black ones are ones where there's no female flight present in the population. The colored ones, there's some female flight present. And it falls out into some distinct groups. This is all the North American ones here. This is the Far Eastern ones, the red ones. This is the Siberian ones. And these are the European ones here. So these markers allow us to identify broad geographic groups. The U.S. is quite distinct from, say, the Far Eastern or the Siberian, or fairly distinguishable from the European, unless it's a U.S. one that has a Siberian haplotype for the mitochondria. But within Europe, distinguishing the flight-capable populations using these markers is not possible. You can see the yellow ones are quite distributed amongst the black ones, for example. Another way to look at this, using the structure program to determine how many clusters would be predicted. There are 12 clusters predicted for all these populations taken together. And you can see that the over here, the North Americans tend to be the cluster 12, and the Far Eastern ones tend to be clusters 1 through 4. Siberian has a higher percentage in cluster 5, but Europe is just a big mixed bag. And I've got the flight capability across the top. You can see there's not really a distinction between flight-capable populations in Europe from those that are non-flighted. So, conclusions. Females capable of flight are found in Asia, Siberia, and northeastern Europe. So, what we tend to talk about is the Asian form is the flight-capable form, but that's not really true. You can't really talk about it as the Asian form. The female flight capability is not fixed in most strains. There's variability across the range within each of the strains that were evaluated. Wing size and muscle strength may be useful in predicting female flight capability, but it's not perfect. And DNA markers are fairly good at predicting broad geographic origin, but not female flight capability. And of course, this took a lot of people to get this done. Okay, any questions? That went faster than when I practiced it.